Welcome to Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Greetings, genies, and welcome to America's Family History Show, Extreme Genes and ExtremeGenes.com, the show where we shake your family tree and watch the nuts fall out. I am Fisher, your radio root sleuth, and you know, I'm coming to realize there is so much going on in family history, we probably need to do 6 produced hours of the show a week. But my wife, Julie, says the lawn has to be mowed at some point, so we'll have to put a hold on that. Last week, I told you about picking up 2 ribbons from 1887 related to the excursion of New York City veteran firemen to and from San Francisco. They were given to the 104 travelers, which included my great-grandfather, by other veteran firemen organizations along the way. One was from Omaha, and the other was from Kansas City. You can see them on our Facebook page. That's Facebook.com/Extreme Genes. They're going to look great in a shadow box. Well, this week, I found some DVDs of some obscure movies from the 40s, one of which starred Humphrey Bogart. Well, my mother was a bit actress in Hollywood back then, and I found a newspaper clipping recently among her effects that listed all the movies she had been in up to that point. Only a few are available at all anywhere, so it's exciting to know I'll be able to see her in a few scenes I've never been able to watch before. I've been able to determine she was in about 8 or 9 movies before she moved into, get this, radio. Her movie career was so huge, I can sum up all the lines I ever heard her utter on the big screen. And, oh, cookie. Needless to say, she was never invited to attend the Academy Awards with the cool kids of Hollywood. Still, it's fun to have these and add them to the family archives. And yes, eBay again. The 2 cost me a total of $8.50. On this week's show, our first guest is a woman whose family history takes her family back to a certain ship that made headlines when it sank in 1912. This is what makes family history so outrageously interesting. Jill Kirby will be on to talk about what she's learned and what happened to her relative that fateful night in April 1912. With the sinking of the Titanic. That's in about 6 minutes. Then later in the show, we'll talk to the creator of the new product that was voted #1 at Roots Tech this past February. It's a product that makes it easy for you and the seniors in your family to capture their stories. We'll talk to Nick Baum of StoryWorth.com and find out about the latest improvements. And of course, Tom Perry returns, our preservation authority, with the latest on the cinematized software saga and the psychology of getting your family to actually use what you preserve. Well, a few days ago, listener Mary Ashbaker of Vancouver, Washington, asked a question that I'd been thinking about myself. Recently, she discovered in an 18th century Bible that had belonged to her 5th great-grandfather, an English sea captain, a lock of hair. And she was wondering if there was a best way to test it for DNA and possibly determine whose hair it once was or how the person was related to her. Well, only the week before, I'd come across some hair from the 19th century Bible from my wife's side that we have. So Mary's question led me to reach out to my friend Dr. Scott Woodward, a true pioneer in family history DNA, and he texted me the following. Hair is usually a good source of DNA, but only if there are roots. Usually, hair kept in a Bible has been cut rather than pulled and doesn't have any root, so not a good source. Any DNA recovered from that sample would probably be a contaminant from someone that has handled it. So there's your answer, Mary, and yes, I'm disappointed too. It sounded like it could have been another fun adventure. It is time once again for your family histoire news from the pages of ExtremeGenes.com. Well, some of you will like this, and maybe some of you won't. The Hollywood Reporter says that the miniseries Roots by Alex Haley will be redone and ready for viewing in 2016. The original 1977 version of the show is still ranked way up there all time as a miniseries. The new version will air on A&E, History Channel, and Lifetime, 3 sister stations. LeVar Burton will be a co-producer on this project, though nothing has been reported about the possibility of him returning to be a part of the cast. Of course, he was the star of the 77 version. It will again be a miniseries running a total of 8 hours and will hit the air sometime next year. Of course, the original series was nominated for 37 Emmy Awards, with victories in 9 categories. The three channels say they will collaborate with historians who cover African and African-American history to assure accuracy. More material from Alex Haley's Roots, the saga of an American family, will be the basis of next year's miniseries. The first one was so brilliant, you have to think they're taking quite a risk to roll it out a second time. We'll see how it's received. Springfield, Illinois has honored their native son, Abraham Lincoln, by recreating his funeral procession's final leg. While Lincoln had 14 pallbearers at his 1865 funeral, 6 descendants of those original 14 came back to Springfield to participate in this 150th anniversary experience. The youngest was William Polston, age 11, from Minneapolis, who said, "I'm learning more about history here than I ever would at school." William is a descendant of Stephen Trigg Logan. William witnessed the casket taken from the train and followed the hearse through the numerous reenactors of civilians and military people. William's mother's line is where the family connection comes in, and only recently did the family learn about Logan's tie to the Lincoln funeral. A Lincoln Funeral Coalition for 2015 found William Polston and his family through Ancestry.com, and they were more than excited about the invitation. Most of the reenactors saw their participation as a way to teach their children of the significance of Lincoln and his contribution to our nation's history. And if you'd like to read more about this and other stories, be sure to check out our website, ExtremeJeans.com. And coming up next, how would you like to dig into your lines and discover that you had a relative on the Titanic? That's what Jill Kirby has in her family. We'll talk to her about her great uncle coming up in 3 minutes on Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show, and ExtremeJeans.com. Welcome to Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show, ExtremeJeans.com. It is Fisher here, the radio root sleuth, always looking for ordinary people with extraordinary finds and extraordinary stories. And boy, do we have one right now. Jill Kirby is on the line. Hi, Jill. How are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm just fine. Thank you.
How long have you been researching?
Oh, probably about 25, 30 years since I joined the LDS Church.
So tell me now, you grew up with an interesting story in your family, no doubt something you wanted to find out more about. Let's get into that. What was that story, and how did you first hear about it?
Well, this is the story of my grandmother's brother, Alfred Albert White. And he was born in Southampton, Hampshire, which is where I was born. And he was born on March the 25th, 1880. My father would say that, you know, my Uncle Alf was on the Titanic. I was fascinated by the story, so I started researching everything about him.
What did you learn, and how did you go about the research?
It was actually not talked about in Southampton because so many people, over 500 people from Southampton, died on the Titanic. He happened to be crew, and he survived. And little really was known about him, so I found out that he'd actually been on the Oceanic. He was a merchant seaman. And he was on the Oceanic, which was another ship that was docked in Southampton in 1912. And about 3 or 4 days before the Titanic sailed, there was a big coal strike going on in Southampton. And I think what happened, they switched the crew from the Oceanic onto the Titanic. And my great uncle, Alfred Albert White, was one of those crew members. And as he was transferred over to the Titanic, because of the coal strike, I suspect, I'm not sure, that the coal was probably put onto the Titanic because it was such a hyped-up ship, and it was the biggest ship of the world.
Of the age, yes, and of course it was the maiden voyage.
It was a maiden voyage, it was unsinkable, so he ended up as a crew member on the Titanic.
Wow. What was his role on the Titanic as a member of the crew, do you know?
Well, there's varying things. He's listed as an electrician, he's listed as a greaser, but he worked in the engine room of the Titanic.
Oh, wow. And not a good place to be.
Yeah, and as they sailed out, he was actually on duty on the night of April the 11th. He was on watch with his mate, with his lantern, when they hit the iceberg. Now, there are a lot of varying reports of the things that happened, and I found as I've researched a lot of books, every story has, you don't know how true everything is.
Right. There are little twists and turns, right? Yes.
And he was on watch when they hit the berg, as they called it. As it hit, he was sent to inspect the side of the ship with his lantern, with his mate, and they reported that there was no visible sign of damage above the waterline. And so he made his way back down to the engine room, and he reported that everything was going on as normal. You know, people were making their coffee, and they just, you know, this ship,
yes,
mentally, everybody knew it was unsinkable. But he went back down to the engine room, and it wasn't until 1956 that his whole story came to light when they were making the film A Night to Remember. And how he survived, and it is quite remarkable, and they do mention him by name in the film that they made about the crew of the Titanic.
Uh-huh.
And so he went back down to the engine room, and he was in charge of, like, the lighting and things like that in the engine room. And how he managed to survive was the one in charge down there turned to him and asked him to go up and see what was going on. And so he made his way up through the dummy funnel. There are four funnels on the Titanic, and the one at the back of the ship, or I'm not too good on the four.
No, I don't think most of us are, but he got up there somehow.
It was a dummy funnel that the crew used to use going up and down the different levels of the ship.
Okay.
And that's how they got up to do their work, you know, on the decks. And so he made his way up through the dummy funnel because he was asked to go up by the man in charge. And as he made his way up and he came out through the dummy funnel, it says here, in 1956, I'm just reading a little bit that was written by Charles Pellegrino, historians overlooked Alfred White. Indeed, aside from providing some background for brief engine room scenes in the film, a version of A Night to Remember, the White account was never made the final cut, primarily because historians universally doubted, until it was discovered in 1985, that the Titanic actually broke in two, as Alfred White had insisted that she had. And because even if believed, scenes of White's remarkable escape as the ship's spine disintegrated beneath him and he rode the fourth smokestack into the sea would have been a prohibitively expensive special effect in 1956.
Wow.
Now it's highly likely, because he did go up through the dummy funnel, the fourth smokestack, and it says that it yawned open underneath him, the Titanic. In other words, it split in two under him. And it was never believed until they actually found the Titanic that it had broken in two.
That's unbelievable.
And his story was filed away, largely forgotten, until Waterlord and Pellegrino, who did this article, began in about 1991 preparing to join the Tulloch expedition to the Titanic. And he actually had a letter that showed up on his desk that Alfred White had written to one of his mates that was with him in the engine room, to the family, to let them know that he was there and he did die on the ship. And he talked about how he'd been with him and he was his friend and how he had lost him. It was written 2 months after the Titanic, when he got back to Southampton, because he was quite badly injured.
Now, do you have some of these letters?
Oh, yeah, I've got loads of information on it.
But I mean, some of the stuff, some of his original material relating to the sinking?
Yeah, I did actually go to the Maritime Museum at Greenwich in London, where they actually have a transcription of his actual letter. I was disappointed. I thought it would be the actual letter.
Right.
But it was a transcription that was transcribed in 1956. So it's out there somewhere, the original, but this was a transcription which I did copy. And it is printed in a number of books that he wrote. But and I think had he not died, more would have come out, you know, about it. Because the White family, that side of the family, lived into their 90s. His wife lived into her 90s. She didn't die until 1965. I was a child. I probably met her, actually, because my dad was close to his family in Southampton. They were all Southampton, going back many generations. But anyway, he actually got up to the top and he realized the terrible, how awful it was, and how the second funnel was already under the water and it was sinking fast. So there was no way that he could go back to report. All the lifeboats were gone. This was about 10 minutes past 2 in the morning. And so So the likelihood that he rode off on the fourth smokestack could possibly be, do I know for sure? No, I don't. But he did end up in the ocean. There were no lifeboats, and he was injured because there were these inflatables, and they were hitting him about the head to keep him out, not because they wanted him to die, but because if he'd gotten in, maybe all of them would have died. So it was basically every man for himself. And he was pulled into lifeboat 4, which was the one with Lady Astor. And I believe that there were 3 crewmen, and I know he was the only one that lived.
Jill, how has this affected your life, knowing that you have this connection to the Titanic?
Well, it actually adds color to your life when you find somebody on your family tree that has a fascinating story. You know, my father would never have done anything about it. Very private man. And I love family history, but it was just fascinating and very interesting. And I go to Southampton often. I'll be there this summer. And I found his grave in the Old City Cemetery, where a number of Titanic survivors are buried. In fact, Alfred Albert White was a witness on my grandparents' wedding in 1911, I believe it was, or 1910. So he was a witness at the wedding, and at his actual wedding in 1902, my grandmother and her younger sister are actually part of the wedding party, so I do have pictures. So it makes it more colorful when I go to Southampton. Southampton did very little about capitalizing on it because so many people in Southampton were left destitute. There was no money coming in because their husbands, their fathers, their brothers, their nephews, everybody died on the Titanic.
Real quick, Jill, was there a survivor's guilt for crew members, and were they shunned, do you think, in Southampton?
No, I never found any evidence of that. I do not think he was, because I think it was quite miraculous. I'm sure he did feel guilt. I'm sure he did. But his was a very legitimate survival, and it was miraculous that he lived in the icy water. And so it really was a great miracle. And as I say, he was following orders. The people that were with him in the engine room were following orders. He lived, and they died. And, you know, he could have died just as easily had he not been sent up to see what was going on.
That's right. That's right.
And so it was absolutely a fluke that he lived and all his friends died. It is a remarkable story. And I'm hoping to put it into like a book to take to the new Titanic Museum in Southampton. And also for the family members that I have become acquainted with because of this, because I've got all the background detail of his birth and going through the census records onto the Oceanic and onto the Titanic. And a lot of people don't realize when the Titanic sank, that is when their pay stopped. So you can see on the list at 20:02 in the morning, and they say how much money they will collect, but that's when they were
unbelievable.
Fired from their job because it was no longer.
Jill Kirby, what an incredible story. Thank you so much for sharing it. And I can only imagine what that's like to have that in your family history. And I imagine it's going to affect generations to come.
Yeah, that's why I need to put it into a little book form.
There you go. Well, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're most welcome. And thank you for asking me.
Oh, and by the way, what Jill didn't mention, her great uncle was actually sunk by a torpedo in World War I and survived that as well. And coming up next, we're going to talk to Nick Baum from Storyworth.com, the ideal Mother's Day gift on Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. Welcome back to Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show, and ExtremeGenes.com. Fisher here, your radio root sleuth. And I will tell you that at Roots Tech, as we were looking at all kinds of new products that were coming out, I don't think anything made anybody more excited than this. Storyworth.com. And I got to meet its inventor, and we've become good friends. Nick Baum is on the phone with us right now. Nick, how are you?
Great. It's good to talk to you again. I'm glad we finally got a chance to meet in person at Ridge Tech.
Well, you know, Nick's project kind of began around the same time as mine. We're watching our growth kind of parallel, and you guys ran away with the best new product for family history at Roots Tech, and there was such a good reason for it. I'll let you explain exactly how it works, Nick.
Right. So Storyworth is really the easiest way to record your family stories. And the idea is, if you're into genealogy, you can get your whole family involved telling stories about their life and really collect these stories from all family members. And the way we make it this easy is we do it all over email and over the phone. So if your relatives aren't super tech savvy or you don't have a lot of time to spend on it, we make it super, super easy for them. You sign your relatives up each week. We send them one question about their life, things like, what is your favorite memory of your grandmother? Or tell me about the day you got engaged. And all they have to do is reply with a story.
Yeah, one story once a week. And in a year, you got 52 stories, which is unbelievable.
Right. People are often surprised. We offer printed books now. And when they order the book, we say, well, you have 237 pages. And they can't believe they've written 237 pages in a year.
Exactly. And it's done so easily. What I like about it is that so many seniors, and those are the people we really need to get to first, they are often really struggling when it comes to computers and that type of thing. You even have a phone version. Tell us how that one works.
So again, we try to keep it as simple as possible. And so for the phone version, you really just have to call in to our phone number once a week, and it asks you to record the story, just like you would record a voicemail. So the nice thing is that it works with any phone. It doesn't have to be a smartphone. It even can be a landline. If they have a cell phone, we'll also send them the question by SMS. And if they have an email address, they can start the call directly from the email we send them. But at the simplest level, it's really just call in and we'll ask you the question and just record the story. Then we save the recording, we email it to your family, and now we also offer transcription. So if you want to get that recording transcribed and have the text of it, we can do that as well.
Is that all automated, Nick?
It's all automated, yes. For the transcription, we actually work with real humans, right? So automatic transcription isn't quite up to par, but for you, it's just request, click a button, and then we handle finding the person to transcribe it and sending it back to you.
Isn't that incredible? And I can only imagine the gems, the treasures that have come from this already. You've only been around, what, a 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, so we're a little over 2 years old right now. So we're just starting out, but we feel very lucky that we were getting so many people interested in family history by making it easy.
Give us some of the feedback that you've gotten, a couple of stories that have come back.
Sure. So one of the things that I've been really happy to see is that people use it for such a wide range of times in their life. So recently we worked with one customer who was preparing a gift for her mother's birthday. And so she collected stories about her mother from all of her mother's friends, and she compiled those into a book, which I thought was a really lovely thought.
Sweet.
And a really lovely gift. And then on the other end, this was actually a very, very touching moment for me, was I got a phone call just last week from a customer whose mother sadly passed away, which, you know, of course, is never a fun call to get. But she was calling to thank us because she has a full collection of stories from her mother that she told me she would never have gotten otherwise. Her mother really opened up to her through this medium, and she spontaneously called just to express her gratitude. And so I think oftentimes we don't think to have these conversations until it can be too late. And I feel very lucky that we can make that happen and make it so easy.
Yeah, isn't that a great thing to do? You create a product that serves so many people in such a great way. That's a great business to have. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. How do you pick the questions, or can the customer pick the questions? Explain that.
That's a great question. So we have hundreds of questions that you can choose from, and we try to span all different times of your life, whether it's childhood or work or love or travels. And by default, we'll select some suggestions, but you have full control over which questions get sent out. So you can change them, you can remove some, you can add others, and of course you can write your own. And I really encourage people to do that, because the best stories are the ones that come from the most personal questions. One way we make sure that always a good question is getting sent out is we'll actually send our customers the questions that we're going to send their relatives ahead of time. So every Friday we say, hey, on Monday we're going to send out these questions. Do you want to change any of them?
That's a great way to go. Okay, so on Fridays you send that out, then on Mondays they get the question, and then they have pretty much, what, a week to get it done?
Exactly, and usually we send them out once a week, and we find that that's a good manageable schedule. Of course, then some people batch them up. They'll save a couple and do them on the weekend and catch up.
Now, in these books that you've put together, you've probably read a few stories that touched your heart a little bit. Nick, what have you seen?
So one of the things that I should point out is that we actually don't read the stories. We are very, very serious about privacy. And so We want people to feel comfortable sharing very personal stories with only their family members. So we never look at the stories. So one of the things we've been doing for Mother's Day is reaching out to customers and asking them if they would like to share a story about their mother for our community. And so we've been posting those on our blog. One that I particularly like is a customer's mother was actually working during World War II in a garment factory, creating garments for the military. And so she has this story about real kind of Rosie the Riveter moments.
Right.
And it's actually been really fun. Our community lead, Hope, has been collecting these stories, and it's just amazing to hear these incredible women and how inspiring they are.
You know, you are so right. We have lost so many World War II people now, and men and women from that era. And I liked what you mentioned earlier, too. You can recapture stories of your people simply by getting in touch with friends or great aunts and uncles, and they can fill in a lot of holes for you through this.
Right, Scott. So on that topic, I actually have a bit of a personal anecdote, which is that my wife's father sadly passed away when she was in college. And, of course, my wife was one of the earliest StoryWorth users, and she signed up her aunt. So her father's sister. And she's been getting a lot of stories about his life and their life growing up together that she would never have gotten otherwise, that she just wouldn't have thought to ask about. But she's getting these very rich stories about her father, even though he passed away 13 years ago. So, yes, inviting siblings, inviting friends is a great way to learn.
So, once again, just for people to understand, you save the voices of these people as they tell the stories, right?
We save the audio recordings. If you attach pictures when you write an email story, we save the photos. And then, of course, when you send an email in, we save the text. So really, everything you send us, we save for you to safeguard.
Six family members, under $80 an entire year. Unbelievable. What a great service.
And again, you get 20% off if you sign up at StoryWorth.com/extreme.
That's right. Just in time for Mother's Day. Nick, great stuff, great product, great invention. You know, it's always exciting to meet people with new ideas on how to preserve our family history. And in my mind, you've got the killer of them all.
Always great to talk.
Welcome back to Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show, and ExtremeGenes.com. It is Fisher here with Tom Perry from TMCPlace.com. He is our preservation authority. Tommy, good to see you again.
Good to see you. I am so excited for today's show.
Really?
Really.
Big news?
Oh, huge news.
Now, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about this Cinematize, and this is like the software for editing videos and maybe digitized old home movies and everything. And you were horrified to hear that they may be going out of business or something was going on because they weren't on the market anymore. Your usual supplier had gone dry. What have you found out?
I am cautiously thrilled. What's happened is they actually called me back to talk about what was going on.
Wow, you couldn't get a call back a few weeks ago.
I know, but they finally called me back, the guy that's basically running the operation now. And what has happened is a larger company, which we're not at liberty to disclose right now, actually bought out Cinematize, or they bought out Verizon and said, you need to close your store. We don't want you selling Cinematize anymore. And the unique thing about it, this company is not interested in Cinematize itself. It wants the technology that Verizon actually owns the patents for. So they're going to take this technology, develop into something else, which I don't even know what that is. However, they can't sell Cinematize anymore as that company.
Right.
They're not interested in it. So I was talking to him and says, well, what's the possibility of licensing it from you? And they go, well, that's a great possibility. We can do that. We just can't manufacture it ourselves.
Are you telling me you could become Cinematize?
We could actually become the distributor.
Wait
or the dealer
a minute.
For
Maybe you and I need to have a little conversation here.
We do.
Well, that's incredible. Are you going to pursue this?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. This software is so important. It can't go away. Just like a few weeks ago, you talked about newspapers and how obituaries are incredible things for finding out genealogy. And when I was listening to that episode, I was thinking, this is exactly what happened with my dad. We found out in his 50s that he was adopted. We didn't know that.
Wow.
And the way we found out his family is we found a brother, and through his obituary, we read all these people, brothers, sisters, nieces, nephews, and started contacting these people, which we never would have got without obituaries. If somebody bought newspapers and said, hey, I don't want newspapers around anymore, like if Rudolph Murdoch went away or something.
Right, right.
We wouldn't have access to these things. And so there'd be all these brick walls that you've taught people how to get through. A whole bunch more brick walls would go out.
So Cinematize is that important?
Oh, it is. It is. The neat thing about Cinematize, If you don't already have it, you need to get it. Try to find it on Amazon, find it on eBay, anything like that. You want to get a copy of it. What this allows you to do is so many people out there have old analog home movies, whether it's film or video or audio or whatever it is, and it's in an analog state. You can't really edit it unless you've got really old school equipment. What you need to do is get it digitized. Whether you bring it into one of our stores or somebody else, you need to get it in a DVD or a CD or a hard drive or some kind of format that it's going to be preserved. And usually the easiest, most inexpensive way is CDs, DVDs, and even now Blu-ray discs. So now once you have this digitized, you'll be able to take hours and hours and hours of talking or movies or VHS tapes or whatever, get them on your computer, and then Cinematize will allow you to go into, say, a two-hour VHS, and there might be a DVD you want to make for Maddie. And so what you do is you go and clip out all the pieces about Maddie and put them on a DVD so she has her own. Cinematize, you can take these DVDs that you've created now, and you have a two-hour DVD, and you might have dozens of them. We have people that bring in sometimes 100 VHS tapes and have them all transferred to DVDs. And now you've got, you know, 200 hours of stuff. Nobody's going to sit down and watch 200 hours.
That is absolutely true. You actually digitized my old home movies from the 50s and 60s. There's actually my parents. And I've looked through it, and it's really fun. But the idea of making it usable is very appealing to me because I really have no idea where to find the good stuff over that 2 hours of scanning that you've done.
Right. And see, a lot of people see this. They see this big, huge mountain in front of them and think, I can't get over this. So they just forget it and go away. And that's not what you want to do. Just start with small things. Set up, you know, like they call short-term goals. If you want to set up something for grandma and grandpa, because they're probably getting a little bit older. So what you do is you go through these DVDs and find the segments that have grandma and grandpa, whether they went with you to Disneyland or you had a family reunion that they're in, things that are important to them. Go through these DVDs and find out what parts you want. Now, the best way to view a DVD is super simple, and most people don't even know that the remote will do it. Put in the standard DVD player and click on the button that's called display. And it might say DSP or have the word display put out. And what it does, it shows you the time code in the corner. It tells you that there's like five chapters and you're in chapter 1 of 5, and then you're at 5 minutes and 32 seconds into the clip. And just get out a ledger pad, or if you have a laptop or a little computer, and just type down notes and say, okay, this is this, this is this, this is this. You're making an index of all your records. And it's a fun thing to do because you're going to see stuff that you don't even remember shooting.
So even if you don't go through and do the full edit job and a nice production package, which might be over some people's heads, this would be a nice way to at least make this mass bulk digitized product usable.
Oh, absolutely. And you can use, if you're a PC user or a Mac user, you can use Excel, you can use Word. There's so many different products that you can go out and use. And the neat thing about Excel is if you put the time, say, okay, chapter 1 of 5, 5 minutes and 14 seconds, this is here, then you put it as an Excel file, then you can sort it. So the main character in this is grandma and grandpa. The main character in this is Bonnie. The main character in this one is David. And so then you can take these DVDs, make copies, or put them up in the cloud, however you want to do them, distribute them to your family, and they can go through this Excel sheet and format it any way they want to. You know?
Yeah, maybe there's a younger member of your family, if you struggle with the technology, who could actually turn this into something for you, having access to that material.
Right, you bet. If you have anybody that's in kindergarten, they're more than happy, I'm sure, to do it for you. Because these kids, it's amazing
it
the technology they understand.
Yep.
And so by going through this, then they do a sort. And so they can see, oh, okay, in chapter 5 of 16 at 5 minutes and 14 seconds, this is our trip to Disneyland. I want to relive this. They'll go and watch that point where they're not going to go through 10 DVDs, 20 hours and find stuff. And so that way, at least you're getting it out. They can start doing stuff. You'll find maybe they have a neighbor or a son or a daughter or somebody that's going to actually go in and want to do the editing. And so you've kind of got them indoctrinated into it. Then you can take your next step, and then you can start doing the same thing with yours, going through and say, hey, I want to put together a little thing for grandma and grandpa. Here's these 20 DVDs. With Cinematize, you can rip out a 5-minute segment, a 2-minute segment, a 1-minute segment, whatever you want. So you're compiling these all down to a small DVD. So when you're done, you might have a 30-minute program, which anybody's going to sit down and watch and enjoy, and it makes it so much easier. And if you have any more questions about Cinematize and how this is going, just send me a question, asktom@tmcplace.com, and I'll try to answer your question just as soon as possible and possibly even on the air.
Real quick, Cinematize works with both PC and Mac?
Yes, it does.
All right, great stuff. Thanks, Tom.
Glad to be here.
That wraps it up for this week. Thanks once again to Jill Kirby talking to us about her great uncle who was on the Titanic, and to Nick Baum, the creator of StoryWorth.com, talking about a great Mother's Day gift. We'll talk to you again next week. Have a great one. And remember, as far as everyone knows, we're a nice, normal family.
This has been Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Share your family story by going to FamilySearch.org.